Well, I'm joined now by Kevin Boothby, who is promoter at Henlow Greyhound Stadium and also Toaster as well. Good to see you, Kevin. I'm going to jump into your personality, first of all. Tell us about yourself, because you strike me as a very positive person. You've sort of been through the ride of life and all with a smile on your face, really.
I think in my life, I've been there, seen it and done it, Judy, to be fair. I mean, I spent many a year working in Lincolnshire on the farm. For what, 14 years? I used to get £10 a week pocket money from the ex-wife. Worked 7 days a week, never really had any prospect. And then one day I thought, I'm sick of this life. So I started, set my own agency up, started supplying factory workers and farm workers to farms. And within a year, 18 months of doing that, I had 300 workers working for me. So my life just totally changed then. And then after doing that for about 4 or 5 years, I had dogs at the time with Lorraine King, and I went to see Lorraine one day, and she said, I'm trialling some dogs at Henlow. I said, Henlow, I've never heard of that. So I went and looked at it, and she said, oh, it's up for sale, and it's something new. And next minute, I think about a month later, I took it over. So, and that was 17 years ago now.
Was that your first experience of greyhound racing then?
No, I had dogs. When I first came out of the army, some lads, mate of mine in Boston, they had dogs with Maggie Lucas at Hackney, and they got me involved with a dog with Maggie Lucas, and then we bought some dogs for Emil Kovac at Nottingham. Well, Emil Kovac's daughter actually works for me at Toaster now, Geraldine Kovac, and she actually trains dogs at Doncaster. So I had a couple of dogs there. Then I've got out of dogs for years, but I'd never had that money, couldn't afford to have dogs. Then when I got the agency, I started having dogs, had a couple with Barry Draper, and then I ended up with some with Lorraine King, and that's where then Henlow came in. So, and then for like the next 10 years, I did absolute fortunes of money trying to keep Henlow going, but yeah, it's all good stuff.
Just going back on something you mentioned there, in your younger days, you were in the army, were you?
I was in the army, I was in the artillery 2469252. I still remember the number.
Wow.
So, I had a training accident and smashed my left knee up. I had 11 operations, got medical discharge, and now I've got 2 metal knees now, but they're really good, so can't complain.
That's good. Good to hear, I think.
The only time I get a problem is when I go through an airport. They think I'm a suicide bomber or whatever. Yeah. So it's not good.
I think it's fair to say that Henlow has been a bit of a rollercoaster for you, not always been the easiest business to manage. And you've had some low times. At one time, you were actually living on site at Henlow in a caravan, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Henlow is... Look, when I got Henlow, my accountant says, what are you doing? I said, oh, I enjoy the old ground racing. He said, but this sort of hobby is costing you a lot of money. And you say, well, yeah, well, I enjoy the crack and enjoy owning dogs, enjoy having a few beers with all the customers and this, that, and the other. And I suppose for years it was okay. And then I got Bob Morton involved, which was good at the time because we were struggling financially. And Bob got involved with Robert and Charlie. And that helped us no end. Then I ended up buying Bob back out. And then it became really difficult. I mean, when you run a track like Henlow with no media right deals or nothing, it's so hard. Basically, you're just putting money in every week. You can never take enough money to pay the bills. And we did go through hard times. And I remember renting my house out in Lincolnshire, and I thought, I need to get moved to Henlow, and it saved me a few quid. And that's what I did. And I think I lived in a caravan at Henlow for about 3 years, which then helped me focus more on the business. And it was good Gordon come along from SIS, and we got the SIS contract. And, you know, we built kennels all over the country and got a massive strength of dogs, and we progressed really nicely at Henlow. And it's so pleasing.
How did that labour of love affect your personal life?
Well, my personal life was Henlow, to be fair. It was just me and my pet dogs, and that was it. And that's how my life got, because, you know, everything for me was Henlow. And we employ staff, and the staff loved working at Henlow, and we've had a lot of the trainers have been so loyal to us over the years. You know, you feel obliged to make this work. And, you know, it was a lot of hard work. You know, we've got there in the end, which is pleasing.
What made you, as a businessman, which you are, a very successful businessman now, change the way you saw greyhound racing from being a hobby to thinking that it could be a business for you? Why was it appealing as a business?
I suppose when I first went to Henlow 2004, I don't know if you ever went to Henlow then, it had an old grandstand there. And it looked terrible. And the first thing I did, me being me, I thought, no, we can't be like that. We need a nice, big, fancy marquee. So I hired this marquee for the first 3 months. It's cost me like no business sense to it. It cost me £2,000 a week. I was doing fortunes with it. But I just wanted to have some sort of restaurant sort of facility there. And then as time went on, a year later, I built the restaurant at Henlow. Look, it's a lovely restaurant. Quite often we've had it packed, 200 people at Christmas. It's always packed. And I suppose with ground racing, we was really packed on Saturday. We used to get like 800 people to 1,000 people in there. It is an exciting sport, and it's great for families to come out and watch, and it's good for people to come out in parties and have a good night out there. And we're getting a track like Toaster, you can just make it that few notches higher and a completely different experience as well. Do you know what I mean? So, look, I think over the years, the sport has struggled. I think a lot of times we've never done ourselves any favours by doing crazy deals and always discounting things and free entry and penny meal deal. And that's why it's ended up so difficult now to actually charge people to come into your stadium. And that's been a problem. And if you don't charge people to come into a track, how do you pay your bills? Unfortunately, like tracks like Henlow, we get paid to race now. So charging people is, we don't have to charge nobody to come in now because we're lucky that we're getting the income. But when you don't have an income for media rights deal, you have to charge people. But you need to put on a show and do things differently. Now, hopefully going forward, when Toaster opens on Saturday nights, you'll see ground racing in a different light, you see. And that's what's so important. And people are probably thinking, oh, he's up his Elliot's, what he's on about. But you wait and see. We've got plenty of little surprises up our sleeve. And we want to give people a great night out of ground racing. And bear in mind, these dogs are the superstars of the show. You know, there's a lot of fast dogs, and we want the fast dogs to run that Toaster and put a right show on them.
And I was going to say, with a love of the sport for you came a love of the actual dogs as well. And not necessarily just fast dogs. I know that you're sat there with three around you right now.
Oh, I've got three. Yeah, I've got Dancer. Yeah, I've got Dancer, King and Bertie.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I love them when retires. I mean, I've got lots of, I don't take no more. I've got three now. And lots. So when I've had King 2 weeks, and first night I got him, he was howling like mad downstairs, like a singer. And he started the other two off. So in the end, I've come downstairs, picked him up and carried him upstairs. And ever since, I've been taking him upstairs every night. So then I have to carry him downstairs then. He's like 35 kilo lump, isn't he? But he sleeps nice and calm in the bedroom, so that's okay.
Well, no, I love him. Coming downstairs?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he just... And when I pick him, and he ready, when I go to bed at night, he just stands at the bottom of the stairs, looks up at me, and then I pick him up. Come on, son, up you come. So he's lovely. And Dancer, she always flies up and she sleeps on the bed, she does. So, but King Cat, he ain't sussed it yet to jump on my bed. He always sleeps on the floor. But they're lovely. And look, I think one thing with this COVID-19, and we're speaking to the rehoming centres and being involved in it massively, they are rehoming so many dogs now, which is great news for our sport. And I think the pleasing thing is, and the easy thing is, these greyhound make great pets. You know yourself, Julie, with Lola. You know, they are a loving, adorable pets. And it's so nice to see that we actually, as an industry now, rehoming so many dogs because of this COVID-19. So going forward, hopefully people will always have dogs as pets because they do make fantastic pets. Mm. And it's so pleasing. I've never known rehoming centres ring me up, Kev, I need a number 10, I need a number 6. They're desperate. They've got a waiting list for these greyhounds now. And that is great news for us. And that's been overlooked, I think, over the last couple of months. You don't hear no story about that. But I think the most positive thing is, with COVID-19, we are in all our dogs, which is so pleasing.
It definitely is one positive thing to have come out of this pandemic. Thank you so much, Kevin. Join us again in part two, where we'll be talking to Kevin all about his gambling and his massive, massive number of greyhounds that he owns. So first of all, Kevin, I've never asked you this question, but where does Savannah, your prefix, come from?
I don't know. I think it's... When I had dogs, I had a little pups with Kim Taylor, and she said to me, oh, why don't you think of a prefix, Kevin? I don't know what, I was just coming up with all these silly names in my head, and also I went, Hannah, Savannah. My daughter's called Hannah, and I thought, Savannah. I thought, I'd do. So I rang Kim up and said, I know, Savannah. And that's how we called everything, Savannah, to all them. So, yeah, it's not a bad prefix.
It's good. It must now be the most used prefix in the country, I'd imagine. How many Savannahs are around at the moment?
Well, I think 150, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I could tell you all the names probably, but I won't tell you the exact number how many it is.
And where do you get your dogs from? Do you breed any yourself at the moment, or do you buy them all in from Ireland?
I've got some. I'm going to start breeding with some of the bitches. I've got a few pups now in Ireland, out of Savannah Puma. So we're going to be breeding more with her and Savannah Diane and quite a few of my brews we're going to breed from. But normally I buy a lot of mine from the sales in Thills. I think it's a fantastic sale there. You get a lot of young pups, 15, 16 months old, and they've always done me well there. I mean, even like Savannah Jessica, who you know, I think she won 13, 14 times at Romford last year. She cost me €700. You know, what a little bargain she was.
Yeah.
And she loved it around Romford. So you can get good value for money from these sales.
What do you look to buy? Are you looking for a Derby class dog or are you looking for graders?
Yeah, well, a bit of a mixture, really. I mean, sometimes you can buy... Look, you're always looking for Derby class dogs. And just before lockdown, I bought, you know, a few nice tights with Diane Henry. We haven't seen them on the track yet because I bought them in the COVID-19 come. So, obviously, you're always looking for them Derby dogs and the big nights. Look, I think last year I won over 100 opens, my dogs. But it's always nice to win them big opens. You know, and before Savannah Winner won me the Cap 1, I think I've been in like 10 finals and been second 5 times. So, you know, you always, as an owner, you always want to win the biggest prize. And obviously the Derby being the biggest prize, of course, we're winning that. So it'd be nice to stage it and be nice to win it at the same time.
I think it's fair to say, Kevin, you enjoy a gamble. I don't think there's any secret about that. Obviously, this interview is just off the back of the COVID-19 situation. So you're missing it a bit at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I felt I had a bet for free. Well, we've been back at Henlow racing for last week now. Buying a bet for 3 months. But yeah, I'll have to start studying for. But I used to love going to Romford on a Friday night and bet with the old, we call him the fishmonger, bless him. And always had a few bets with him. And I enjoyed the crack on a Friday night going to Romford with the lads and having a bet on the dogs. And sometimes we'd take 7 or 8 dogs there. And yeah, sometimes it's a painful experience and sometimes it's a happy experience. So, yeah.
So from you saying that, it sounds like you prefer to gamble on course to online.
I never bet online. Obviously, I don't bet Henlow online anyway. I never do have a bet at Henlow. We bet one of the local bookmakers at Henlow. But no, I never bet online. The only time I bet online is if I got a dog running at Crayford or somewhere like that, and I might have a few quid on, or I might do, if I got 4 or 5 at Romford, I might do a lucky 31 or something like that. But normally, I'm one of them old fashioned punters. It's nice to go to a course, have a bit of cash on, and get paid in cash, you know.
Interesting. Does owning so many dogs give you an edge when it comes to gambling?
I think, yeah, definitely. But I think, especially like Henlow, you know, I could have a lot of young pups coming through and you just watch them and they sort of tell you when it's worth having a bet on them. You know, normally I think with a new pup at the track, first 2 or 3 runs, you can't have a penny on it. And then when they start showing something, that's the time to bet them. So, yeah, it does help you. And with owning so many dogs as well, a lot of times, you know, your dogs are in the sort of wrong sort of grade. They can't win that level. So you have to wait till they get dropped. Then if they get the trap, they're worth a bet. So, yeah. Yeah, it does make it easier in one aspect, I suppose.
And you get tip-offs from trainers?
Oh, do you know what? I don't listen to trainers. I mean, one of my trainers, Frank, bless him, if he's got 2 in a race, he's guaranteed to give me the loser. He always gets it wrong. Whichever one he says, he will win. So I always make my own opinion up. So best way.
And how do you make that opinion? You said, obviously, you know, if a dog's in the wrong or right grade, but what else are you looking for?
Yeah, I suppose because I watch so much racing and I like to think I've got a decent opinion about my dogs and even other people's dogs. So, you know, I always memorise the race and it's always them hard luck stories. If I'm watching a race from a punter's aspect, I'm always looking for that dog who's unlucky being behind. It's not always about out and gone, that's impressive. It's them hard luck stories from behind, especially if they're hard luck. And then they get dropped in grade, then you can have a bet. So it's about being patient. I mean, like you look at a track like Henlow, do 84 races a week. You only need 3 or 4 winners. You know, people, and that's the key. I think that's the key to winning money from a gambling point of view. Just bet 3 or 4 races a week, pick 3 or 4 good things, and that's it.
So being selective. And do you watch all the races or do you watch the videos back?
Obviously, lately I'm so busy, but I always get my cameraman to send me the video. So I always watch the videos. And I love watching my young pups starting out and seeing how far they can progress. And I have loads of dogs at Henlow go completely through the grades and then go on to an open, so it's pleasing.
And we've talked about your sort of positive personality, but I'm sure you've had times where you've had losing streaks, where you're gambling and it seems to be a never-ending losing streak. How do you deal with that?
I'm a good loser, to be fair. So, you know, like I say, sometimes I've been to Romford and the lads were telling me, we've gone down, we've had a right bad night, and I've been the one I just laugh to myself and get on with it. So, you know, any bet to what you can afford to lose, and don't cry over spilt milk sort of thing. So it doesn't bother me. Look, you win, you lose. So, yeah. I suppose sometimes if you go through a bad run, you just got to forget about it and move on. And if I think punters, and I see them all the time, I see them at Henlow, then people could lose week in, week out. They come, oh, my luck's out, next time I have a bet. Something happens and I lose the game. I think you've got to be, you need that positive mindset, I think, when it comes to having a bet.
Could you ever have seen yourself as a professional punter?
If I wasn't doing what I was doing now, probably, yeah, because I would just, like say, places like Henlow and even like Toaster going forward, you just pick out so many bets a week and put four or five up on the tipping line. And I think you'd win money that way, to be fair. I think I've been involved in the sport so many years and I understand the grading race side of it well. I've got a lot of dogs. So, yeah, I suppose in a way I do have an edge, but I do have a good opinion as well, which is important. So, yeah. So, yeah, it's good to have a bit of a bet and it'd be nice to have a bet, actually. So we'll have to start getting a few quid out, I reckon.
Let's talk about the greyhound racing industry as things stand. What are your hopes for the sport? Not for your tracks, your hopes for greyhound racing. Do you think we're in a time of change?
I think we're in a massive time of change and it's worrying that, you know, already we've had a few tracks closing us and hopefully them tracks will reopen again. What's holding for greyhound racing going forward? I don't know. I think it's going to be very difficult for us. I think we need to get the crowds back. When all this social distancing and that ends, I don't know. So I think it's challenging times for the sport. But I'm sure if we do things the right way, we can come out the other side and things can be good for us. But it's definitely the next 6 months is going to be so challenging for every track in the country and the sport in general.
If you could swap jobs for a day and you were Mark Bird for one day, what would you change?
Well, there's a lot of things I'd change, to be fair.
I don't think I could.
Eh?
Look,
I think Matt's coming. He's had a tough time, right? And obviously the COVID-19. But to be fair to Matt, he's definitely approachable and he helped me no end with the Toaster application. And it's difficult for him. And, you know, I look at my things from a tracks perspective, where Matt's got to look at everything from everything all in sort of thing. So, you know, I think Matt's done a great job. But obviously, I look at things differently because I'm in the sport. I own dogs. You know, I'm involved with trainers and this, that, and the other. So I live and breathe the sport. And so I think my mindset would be different to a lot of people. You know, all I ever want to do is for the best for the sport. And I think that's important to have that sort of mindset. So, yeah, I think I would change a lot of things.
What's the most important thing you'd change?
I think the massively most important thing would be the welfare side. I don't think we've done enough over the welfare of the dogs over the last 5-6 years. I know we have policies with ground trust and this, that, and the other, but I don't think there's ever been enough done on rehoming a dog. And I think I've proved it myself personally that every dog can be rehomed. And we've always thrown out statistics saying that X amount of dogs are rehomed, this, that, and the other. Well, all dogs should be rehomed. You know, I think even dogs who are very nervous, they still can be found home for somebody living on a home, this, that, and the other. So, yeah, definitely the welfare side of things I would have probably done differently. But that's easy for me to say. I'm not in that job. But, yeah, just my opinion.
I definitely thought more money would be a good thing. But listen, on that note of the welfare, just flip your camera around quickly and show us your retired dogs laying there. Let's have a look.
There's Dancer and there's King. That's what you call chilling out, Julie. You've actually Bertie, he's in my office, he's fast asleep, Bertie, so, yeah.
He's bored of our interview, and then there's Lola too, asleep.
And I love her, so.
Oh, she's typing as well, so you can't see her. Listen, thank you so much for your time, Kevin, it's been great to talk to you.
Excellent.
And good luck, continued success for the future.
Oh, and Julie, thanks.
Star Sports are the proud sponsors of the English Greyhound Derby. All part of our commitment to the sport from the home of greyhound racing betting. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.